We have more news today on the Navy's daring assault last week on the Japanese islands in the Western Carolines. As a result of the sudden attack of the American task force, all enemy ships then at anchor in the ports of Palu, Yap, and Woleai Islands were sunk or damaged. The whole story of that deep raid into enemy waters has not yet been fully told. The Japs resisted vigorously. 27 of our planes were lost. It's announced that, in addition, U.S. submarines have torpedoed 14 more Japanese supply ships in Pacific and Far Eastern waters. Land-based Army bombers have again completed missions against enemy installations in the Truk Lagoon and on Ponape. The French Committee in North Africa, in its resolve to represent all colors of French opinion, has today, for the first time, admitted two members of the French Communist Party. And now, a word from Charles Lyon.
Yes, friends, the days are getting longer, but you still may not be getting enough sunshine. You still may not be getting all the fresh fruits and vegetables you need. So this is no time to let down that vitamin A and D guard. Keep it up by taking a single one-a-day brand vitamin A and D tablet every day. Each tablet provides your full basic daily requirements of vitamins A and D. So take one tablet every day to help you keep up your normal resistance against colds and to aid in the formation and maintenance of healthy teeth and bones. Low in cost, yes, because you can get your vitamins A and D from one a day for just a little more than a penny a day. Try them. Tell your druggist you want one-a-day brand vitamin A and D tablets made by Miles Laboratories. Look for the big one on the yellow package. And now back to John W. Vandercook.
Big bomb American bombers based in Italy have today given another valuable assist to our fast-moving Russian ally. What is described as a considerable strength of forts and liberators have completed a 1,000-mile round-trip flight over the mountains of Yugoslavia and over the plain lands of the Danube Basin to attack the Romanian capital of Bucharest. It is the first time that that pale and decidedly miniature Balkan copy of Paris, as the Romanians like to think of it, has ever been the target for American bombs. It is estimated that the incendiary and explosive load may have approximated 1,000 tons. Extra-long-range American fighters provided the four-motored aircraft with a protective escort out and back. Like yesterday's target of Budapest, the Romanian capital has become a jam-packed and probably almost hysterically busy way station on the German supply route to the brand-new Balkan front. The Russians themselves, meanwhile, have almost succeeded in expelling the last of the surviving Nazis from the southeastern pre-war Polish railway center of Tarnopol. During the last 3 days, members of the German garrison there have been killed at the rate of 1,000 a day. In northeastern Romania, the Soviet peasant general Marshal Konev has now broadened his fast-rolling front line to a length of 70 miles and is converging on the once-upon-a-time largely Jewish city of Iasi that lies about 10 miles west of the Prut River. Iasi, with 100,000 population, the largest university in Romania and various art schools and academies, had some pretensions as a city. It's at the confluence of three railways, all of which will be extremely useful for the Russians in their continued advance to the west and south. The only perceptible slowdown in the Russian offensive, as had been generally anticipated, is on the immediate approaches to the city of Odessa. The Red Troops within the last day or two do not seem to have come any closer to that great German-held Black Sea port. Odessa's hinterland is well protected by a series of shallow lakes and swampy areas. The Germans are exerting themselves to the utmost, naturally, to delay their departure from that last corner of the Russian Ukraine. What is left of the Nazi forces on the left bank of the Dniester is attempting in all haste to fall back upon that seaport before other Russian units can cut off its one line of escape. Down in our near-neighbor Republic of El Salvador, a revolutionary movement against the dictatorial government of President General Maximiliano Hernandez Martinez broke out Sunday, but we now learn was immediately put down. Quiet prevails in the little capital of the tropical Central American Republic, and its inhabitants are going about their usual occupations, with their same president as before, in very much in charge of things. And now George Thomas Folster has another of his highly dramatic and unusual broadcasts for us, direct by shortwave from the Southwest Pacific. His report comes to us by way of San Francisco.
Go ahead, Tina. Go ahead.
Speaking from the Russian Ladies and gentlemen, we regret that because our signal to the South Pacific no longer is sufficiently clear, we will be unable to complete this portion of our program. We return you to John W. Vandercook in New York.
That sudden, unfortunate termination of George Thomas Folster's broadcast requires a word of explanation. George Folster, our own News of the World correspondent in the Southwest Pacific, had obtained permission to take a microphone into a plane flying above Bougainville Island over the Empress Augusta Bay position held by the American and New Zealand troops. He was broadcasting directly from that plane, from which he could see below him the entire beachhead area on the west coast of Bougainville and the mountains of the interior still largely occupied by the Japanese. For the reasons which one can well understand of the difficulties of transmission, we were, however, unable to get a sufficiently clear signal. So, unfortunately, we cut that broadcast short. And now, for the direct news from Great Britain, we take you across the Atlantic to London.
This is John McVane in London. Algiers has announced that two communist deputies have received cabinet posts from the French government, and General de Gaulle has been appointed commander-in-chief of all the French armed forces. It may be as well tonight to sum up the Allied position on France, for observers here get the idea that neither the situation inside France nor the strength of General de Gaulle and the French committee have been adequately estimated. At the moment, both the British government and British public opinion are giving wholehearted support to the idea of handing over the administration of liberated areas of France to the French committee. It's thought in some quarters here that many governmental circles in America favor the same move. There's been strong British protest and even indignation at the reported scheme to saddle General Eisenhower with the burden of making deals with any groups inside France that happen to present themselves. The British are convinced there's no alternative to complete cooperation with General de Gaulle. They feel that making Eisenhower responsible for the present scheme would embitter the relations of France with both Britain and America for many years to come. In the opinion of experts here, France today is de Gaulle and the French committee. To pretend otherwise is a dangerous illusion. And the time left to take account of this is growing terribly short. Parliament today heard two important announcements. First, that British Empire casualties in the first 4 years of the war are 667,159 men killed, wounded, and missing. Second, the government turned down a request to debate the Atlantic Charter. Lord Cranborne, speaking for the government, declared all the Allied governments had subscribed to the Atlantic Charter, but if each one were to start giving its own definition, there'd be confusion. He said the Charter could be discussed, but now was not the time for it. Lord Cranborne said the Allied and Dominion Prime Ministers are going to confer on the matter. This is John McVane in London, sending you to the NBC newsroom in Washington.
And this is Morgan Beatty in our nation's capital. Wisconsin voters, like Oklahoma's, don't seem nearly as excited about their primary as the advance bulletins would indicate. First reports are that voting is light in today's Republican and Democratic trial runs, despite the fact that all the Republican big guns are making big noise, that is, all the big guns that have yet appeared above the presidential horizon. One thing seems to be almost clear, that Wilkie may be ready to move into the home stretch or quit, according to his Wisconsin showing. He has said that if his hand is not upheld by the voters of Wisconsin, then the Republican Party is going to take a route down to defeat. That's not exactly saying that he's going to get out if he doesn't get a psychological lift toward the presidency in Wisconsin, but it's pretty close. And Wilkie's own supporters are willing to admit that he must elect half of his 24 delegates if he's put in the primary race, or his goose is at least partly cooked. Here in Washington today, Admiral Ross McIntyre held a press radio conference on the president's health. He did not mention the rumors going around, rumors that have even reached me from a distant city on the telephone, rumors that Mr. Roosevelt has been seriously ill. But Admiral McIntyre, who has long been watching over the president's health, made a full report today, and here's how it goes. I can say to you, he told reporters, that the thorough checkup we have made on the president's health is satisfactory. The only thing we need to finish up on is the residual. These doctors can certainly find words, can't they? The residual of his bronchitis and one of his sinuses. They are clearing up very rapidly. We decided, for a man of 62 plus, that we had very little to argue about. I am giving the president a vitamin boost, said the admiral, and I'm prescribing sunshine. You know, he added, White House officials can be criticized, and I include myself for not working out a routine providing the president with more fresh air and sunshine.
Can't you get the president some sunshine? Asked one reporter. The doctor replied that the White House staff is doing everything it can, but the president is a pretty busy man. It would be my observation that Admiral McIntyre's report is complete and accurate. I talked briefly with the president after one of his recent press conferences, and except for the normal marks that age leaves on a man in his position, he seemed to me to be his usual snappy self. So I would judge he's a sound fourth-term contender if he wants to run. And here's the rest of the news. The American Federation of Labor argued before the War Labor Board today that living costs have risen 43%, while the Little Steel wage formula limits wage increases to 15%. The Federation wants the difference made up to the working man. But government statistics do not agree with the Federation up to now. And the CIO has just taken a hot potato out of the president's lap. Phil Murray withdrew the CIO claim today to representation on the International Labor Organization meeting in Philadelphia, April the 22nd. This clears the way for the appointment of Robert J. Watt of the AF&L. At least, Mr. Watt has represented labor on that organization for several years. And the OPA today unwound another piece of annoying red tape, this time for the nation's motorists. From now on out, or rather, to be accurate, from April the 20th on out, you will not have to take your tires in for regular inspection as you have in the past. Only motorists who need to replace old tires will have to stand inspection. The reason for this, says the OPA, is that the average motorist now is taking good care of his tires. And tonight, the Army, the Navy, and the War Shipping Administration report that they are filling in our soldiers on soldier voting laws. Complete instructions have gone out on the firing line, in the ships at sea, and in the merchant marine, telling soldiers, sailors, all of our servicemen and women how they can make their vote count this year. Come to think of it, that's no easy task, but that's what happened in Washington today.
In just 44 seconds, John W. Vandercook will return with some more late news. Friends, if a miserable headache is giving you trouble right now, making you feel grumpy and irritable, try Alka-Seltzer for prompt relief. Dissolve an Alka-Seltzer tablet in a glass of water, then drink it. And for especially fast relief, make it 2 tablets. You see, Alka-Seltzer offers such prompt relief because it is dissolved when you take it and is therefore ready to go right to work. And because of valuable buffers, its pain-relieving analgesic loses little or no effectiveness. So try Alka-Seltzer. Never be without it in your home. Your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60 cent size packages. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
New Delhi, fires set by the Jap invading columns in the forest at the edge of the Manipur Plain in India, now highly inflammable in that particular sector at the end of the long dry season, have today forced a further withdrawal of the British Indian defenders. Some were lost in the burning woods. It's estimated, however, that the Japs have suffered at least 10,000 casualties since they crossed the Burma border a month ago. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Until tomorrow at this same time, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Remember, friends, listen to our other Alka-Seltzer News of the World program every morning featuring Robert St. John, 10:15 Eastern Wartime, 9:15 Central Wartime on many of these same stations. And may we suggest it's wise to check up on your supply of Alka-Seltzer. Never be without it in your home. This is Charles Lyon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.